What's going on, everybody? This is Blackman Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray, and we're talking about generational wealth, mental health, finance, and business. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. And before we introduce today's guest, my brother Eric from Huntsville, back in Hunts, Vegas. Who you have for our Black Men Sunday Spotlight, my brother?
Hey, thank you for that introduction, Corey. Hey, my spotlight today is about a brother named by the name of Charles Frederick Page. Now, a lot of people may not have heard that name before, but let me tell you a little quick snippet about him. Did you know that Charles Frederick Page created an airship in Louisiana for the Wright brothers? Basically, the Wright brothers, as you know it, were known for being the first to invent and build and fly the world's first successful airplane. The brothers' historic flight of the plane took place on December 17, 1903 in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. But this is a name that you won't hear many about in the history books. It's Charles Frederick Page. Now, this had been applied for a patent 8 months before the Wright brothers ever took flight at Kitty Hawk. Page filed for his patent in 1903, and he was awarded in April 10th of 1906. However, in the meantime, he built a life-size model of his aircraft in the local newspaper of the Town Talk Interview, which is the local newspaper again, about his invention. Now, Page wanted the world to know about his invention, so he sent the aircraft to the 1904 Louisiana Purchase Exposition in St. Louis. Now, the Page airship somehow, quote, mysteriously disappeared after sending it to the fair, but it never came back. Eva Page, which is Page's daughter, later told the local newspaper, the Town Talk, that the airship may have been stolen. Something to wonder about, huh? That's my spotlight for today. Mr. Frederick Page, now back to you, Corey.
See, man, see, I could take that to a lot of levels. I'm kind of leave that alone today, but I'm kind of like, really? So, hey, I'm going to just leave it at that, man. What's going on in Hunts, Vegas, bro?
Man, everything's everything, man. You know, we've been storming here, too. We had a lot of big name people to show up here, man. You know, this weekend we had Master P and with his reunion tour. We had DC Young Flowers is here this weekend.
And, Young Flizzle, yeah.
Yeah, so we had a lot of stuff going on. Shaq's going to be here later on in the week, so. We doing some things back here, man. We doing some things.
Yeah, I was going to say, y'all better be doing some things because, you know, it's about to be football season. You know, the real A&M about to show y'all A&M who's the boss.
We'll see. Time will tell.
Yeah, there you go, man. Hey, man, I appreciate that spotlight.
That FAMU, that fake AMU. That's what the FAMU stands for, right?
Yeah, and you call us what, those rattlesnakes?
But you know, chicken steaks. All right.
There you go. I do it. You know, I'm just warming the bus because, you know, it's not fall yet. But I was going back listening to some of the old shows. I was like, man, me and you used to get into it after your spotlights. I just wanted to warm you up a little bit. So I appreciate that spotlight, my brother.
Hey, we appreciate you, man. Thanks. Definitely. Thanks for everything.
Definitely. So, hey, all man, right. It's Black Men Sundays. It's time to introduce today's guest, man. We're talking to a senior wealth advisor. This sister is the founder of L. West Advisors. But this sister also, when we're talking about generational wealth, what really brought me to want to bring this sister on the show when I was looking at her bio, I said, okay, there's the family CEO mindset, the missing pieces of generational wealth. Because, you know, we have financial advisors. You know, we have accountants come on the show. We've had the people talk about the seven streams of income, all that good stuff. But I feel like she can give us some updated financial models because I couldn't believe it. I was like, you telling me our financial models are outdated now in 2025? Wow. Without further ado, LaVeisha Davis, welcome to Black Men Sunday. Sister, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing amazing this Sunday, way better than I deserve, Corey. But thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, definitely. And let's just go on and get this conversation started. You know, I want to, you know, get into your background and all that, but I'm going to just drop you in that fish grease right now. Let's get it going. Cause we're talking about generational wealth. Cause I've had guests on the show come on and they say, you know what? I spent my whole life creating generational wealth for my family only to have family members fight over my money. I've seen family members pass away. They sell the house and they just split their money and the wealth is gone. And then I'm hearing, you know, factually, that generational wealth, we spend our whole time creating that and establishing that and investing the money, but it only really lasts for one generation. So let's just go on and get this party bus going. Let's go.
I mean, it sounds like we jumping right into the high fish grease, just like you described it, because that is typically what happens. You know, the first generation works very hard to create some source or some amount of resources, while the second generation typically destroys it, or they may enjoy it, and then the third generation definitely leads to some type of destruction or just complete depletion of the wealth. And to just jump right into it, there's a number of things I'm sure we're going to get to discuss, but throughout our conversation, I just want everyone to be able to clearly walk away with the difference between our wealth potential, you know, what we're able to obtain in our individual lifetimes. There are a couple of things that I want people to understand the difference between, but the wealth potential, what we have done in our lifetime, and the portability of that wealth. What we struggle with is making our wealth portable. While other communities or some of our other counterparts or peers are more successful in being able to transfer that wealth and actually keeping it inside of a family or whatever system they create for it to stay in. The second part is that I want people to understand the differences between, as we engage more in conversation, there is a very huge difference between independent financial security, where we are just, you know, striving to support ourselves when we choose to no longer work and we just want to be able to maintain our lifestyle, not be a burden on anyone, you know, just have an abundance of resources for ourselves versus creating multi-generational wealth. Two different paths, two different planning strategies. They're just completely different. And I know we're going to uncover what those differences are when we get even deeper into the grease.
Definitely. Yeah, because when I look at Black Men Sundays, I mean, this is episode 152. We're starting season 7. I mean, we've been around for a minute. We've been dropping shows every Sunday for years. So, but we've had estate planners come on. We've had tax strategists come on, investigators. We've had people just to structure your system, whether you're talking about, okay, I don't want to have kids, but I want to have some wealth. So, I want to give my money to the Boys and Girls Club, or I want to donate it. Or, okay, I'm about to have a few kids. I want to pass my businesses down. So we've had all the flavors come on. But then when I was looking at your publicist, when they sent me your bio, I was like, hold up, those are outdated financial models. So let's jump into that too. Because I'm like, hey, whoa, I'm excited because this is 2025. We starting a new season. And you know what? A lot of sisters be like, it's Black Men Sundays. But guess what? A sister's on Black Men Sundays. So let's get it.
Let's give two snaps for having the woman on the Black Men Sunday. Like, I feel so welcomed. I feel at home, and that's a different conversation. But I'm telling you, I'm glad to be here. But you said something in there. We've had guest conversations in pieces, and that is the same way it's showing up in our planning, is in pieces. It's fragmented. And when we are establishing wealth that's supposed to last, not just for generation one, but generation two, three, and beyond, fragmented advice becomes conflicted. It actually creates more gaps and more challenges than success rates. Now, what has separated foundational wealthy families, ones that we know off the top of our head, if we just list them, Waltons or Rockefellers or however deep we want to go, they have created a system called a family office model that removes that conflicted advice and that fragmented service and conversations and brings them to one centralized station that's all moving, making their wealth move with purpose. So we haven't had as much experience in making our wealth move with purpose because we've just been in this survival mindset, and it can go a little bit deep. Survival, security, just making sure we have, hey, I just want to pass on a house. I just want to make sure I have a life insurance policy where my burial expenses are covered, et cetera, versus a systematic approach that whatever we do to generate wealth in generation one may not be what generation two wants, but the system is there that supports whatever their wishes are, however they intend to add to the wealth value. So it's not about, do you want to take this business? Do you want to take this real estate portfolio? It's about creating a system where the second generation can find their way and add additional value. And that's just where we've been disconnected. Of course, not by accident, but that's where we've been disconnected. And that's the way of LOS Advisors, is kind of bringing family enterprise family wealth, systematic wealth back into the fold, and no longer this individual approach, thinking we're going to be able to get some economic mobility by moving one step at a time.
Okay, well, so you ain't come to play with us today, but I ain't come to play either. And you mentioned something that I like. You said VFOs, virtual family offices. What is that?
Yeah, so a family office is essentially how I like to describe it is your centralized wealth command center, where every portion or every aspect of your wealth is managed internally. It's not just fragmented. So there's major areas that comes to wealth building. Like it's not a one layer. It's very complex, but it doesn't have to be. You described them: estate planning, tax planning, investment planning, asset protection planning, business planning, philanthropy planning. These are all aspects of wealth. So if you have people doing them in their own individual silos, it creates chaos. But the family office kind of brings it to one place. So now you're not just in the business of the thing that makes you money, whether you have a service-based business, a product-based business, a real estate portfolio, whatever has made you income, you're not just in that business, you're in the wealth business, and your wealth business is being managed full time. That's what that family office model does.
Don't let me just hold on, because I feel like this sounds too good to be true, man. Because when I, unfortunately, as I age, life happens. You lose family members. You see family members that you looked up to as kids arguing with someone that you used to look up to over assets, over, I'm gonna just say assets, because I ain't about to do all that, because they probably listening to Black Men Sundays right now. But I'm
Maybe.
just saying. But I'm just saying, like, as far as from like the impetus of setting up your virtual family office, like, how do you set that up to avoid the family conflicts?
So family conflicts are inevitable. Even some of the most established families, again, that we think of or that comes to mind, suffers from some form of family conflict. You can't just avoid it. But there's a system or a governance structure in place that's supposed to keep some checks and balances in there. So there's two parts in there that I want to answer. You say, first, how did you even form something like this? There's a couple of different ways. When I describe that you are in the wealth business, when you think of a business, what roles even come to mind that need to be filled? Like, what's the number one role that comes to mind when you think of a business that needs to be fulfilled in order for this business to even get off the ground?
You need a business plan and you need
Okay.
some money. But if my brothers want to jump on, but you're doing it
Business plan,
unconventional.
money, we're going to keep those in mind. But what role? But I want to keep those two things in mind. But what role needs to be filled in order for this business to get off the ground?
The first role I would say would be like, you need like a chief executive who's gonna set the vision for the so to me, like whenever I try to start a business, I always start with the chief executive. Reason being, that's the founder. So that's the person that's gonna actually get the business off the ground, build the vision, write the business plan. And then the business plan has certain steps in it. So then you want, like, if they usually when you start off a business, it's the same person doing all the jobs, right? But you want to kind of build it out, like, okay, you got your chief financial officer if you got that. You might have a chief operating officer if you got that. Like I said, generally you might have a partner, so maybe you got somebody with a finance background and they can do the chief financial stuff, but you're gonna be doing the chief. But the executive is probably going to be doing executive stuff as far as vision setting and setting that, and operations as far as day-to-day management, and then going on into marketing and communications and strategic strategic communications and things like that.
Absolutely. Is it Kalali?
Kalali.
I couldn't have asked for a better answer. You listed it first, the chief executive. There has to be the founder, the person who is going to write the vision, who designs the plan. So when anyone asks, how do I even start this? It starts with understanding that your family is a business and you are in the business of growing in value, whatever form that comes in. But when you realize that my family is a business, I have to start off that initial role. I have to appoint that role as founder or CEO. Without that, there's no one to paint the vision. There's no one to get the buy-in. There's no one to design the plan of where this family could potentially go. It starts with identifying who's going to step up and decide that our family business is primary. I know we're all seeking as entrepreneurship and trying to find different businesses that we can find to make money, but we are born with the business of family. And that is the first asset or the first resource that we could be good stewards of. So the first part to building it is that role. Now that breaks down into a few other things because that role may not be easily filled. You can do it in one of three ways. The first way is to become it. If you know that your family does not have representation in the field of wealth management, in the field of generational wealth creation, you know this. That's why we can't pass assets down. We don't have the income. We have a survival mindset. So you know that this is missing. You can become it. That was my experience. After losing my brother as a victim of violence, I had to watch my mother grieve losing her only son, but she could only do it for a short period of time because she couldn't afford to stay off work any longer. It was devastating to see not only did my mother have the resources to bury my brother, or he didn't have the individual resources, we didn't have them collectively. That was a problem. So I recognized that, okay, in order to change my family's position, I'm going to have to step into a role I didn't know I had to. So you can become it, pursuing certain levels of education, financial licenses, because those things open doors for knowledge, access that you wouldn't have had to be able to take your family business to the next level. Same thing that it does when you're growing a business, just thinking about your family business. Now, becoming it is challenging because the way that you make money is time consuming. You already have a career, you already have an expertise. If that's challenging, you can create it. We tend to be way too free with our children's choices in the careers that they choose. We should be more intentional. We don't have wealth management representation. We don't have political representation. We don't have legal representation. We don't have this in our family. We're missing it. We're all laborers. That's an issue. So now I need to be intentional about the careers my children choose so that they can become that family CEO that's going to drive our family business to the next part. And if you are in a position, well enough, I can't become it. And I'm way too far off from creating it because I'm just now having children. You can outsource it. And now you're seeking a service that doesn't just provide you a fragmented advice like what we just described earlier. I need a comprehensive approach that can serve my wealth business, that can serve my estate planning needs, that can serve my investment needs, because we're going to need this money to grow, to support this business so it can become a retirement source for the senior generation. It can become an income source. It can become a asset source for the generation that's supposed to grow it even more. You can outsource that and just be selective and make sure you are aware of how to pick that co-CEO. Because now, since you can't do it, now you're kind of going in partnership with someone. And that's what LOS Advisors, it represents, is the access to make, again, your family business the primary business that we're serving. So I hope that answered it. A long way of being able to say how you can start to create this yourself.
Gotcha, yeah. And what we'll do is, I had a fella chat with you in a minute because I normally get mine off first, and then we'll have the brothers introduce themselves and talk to you. But I like how you did it. That was cool though. But I'm just saying, let's talk because I mean, basically, you explained the family CEO mindset. But when I'm really thinking about that, and I'm thinking, okay, outside of my immediate family, but my wife's family's huge, so it's like, how do you establish who's who to play their position, if you will. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I mean, you know your family and your wife's family better than the professionals that's going to serve you. There does have to be some level of assessment. Now, how you do that, there's so many other factors to consider. Family dynamic, like, can we even get everybody in one room, or is that going to be a problem? Do we need to break this down? It's individual conversations. But that same, as Kalali had hinted to, you have to create the vision. And then you have to display this vision. You have to present this vision. We will write a business plan to borrow money and put on the show to present why they should give us this money, but we won't present a plan to our family on why we should get their buy-in. So you have to have these conversations, these hard ones, to see if they're going to give you their buy-in. And if they don't, do not discount their no right away. It's not a no, it's just a not right now, because sometimes our trauma requires us to see the proof. Let me see what you're gonna go do first. Again, this is from experience. My husband and I have been entrepreneurs for a very long time. And in the beginning, because of the difficulties that come with it, and we're going from pillow to post in our family's houses, they're like, I don't know about this entrepreneur thing. It's looking real homeless. Like, I don't know. I think y'all should just get a job. Like, it was hard to see in the beginning until the fruits of those labors started to harvest. And then it was like, okay, what I got to do? How can I be a part of it? How can I help? What role you need me to play? So now our family has quite a few positions throughout our portfolio. So you got to get, you do have to have the conversation about the vision. You do have to get their buy-in. If you don't get it right away, don't discount them, but you do have to find those initial people that's down for the cause. And if they don't come in the form of brother, sister, aunt, uncle, cousin, niece, nephew, even don't be alarmed with that. Sometimes it comes with people that you've had affinity with for a long period of time, but they're not blood related. Look at LeBron James and the circle of influence of and wealth he's been able to create, but these are not blood relatives. These are just people that he's had direct affinity to. So creating the vision, having the conversation, presenting the vision, getting the buy-in, and not just leaving it to direct blood relation, but there is opportunity for partnership to grow wealth as well. Even the Anheuser-Busch, if you look at that brand, those are two families that was a result of two individuals combining that. So I trust me when I say I know. It's not going to be the easiest battle. Because we are fighting against years of trauma, years of survivorship. Just it's not going to be easy. But if you find those who already have done half the work, which is changing their mindset, it's going to be a lot easier to get the buy-in.
Yeah, because one thing you didn't mention was generational poverty perspective. So it's like, how do you get the elders who may be retired, who may be early 60s, about to retire? How do you get them to buy in with you? And then I'm gonna just give you my other question on top of it, and I'm gonna let you ride. When we're talking about the high income earners, not rich yet, I think what they call Henrys. So how does, because there's a lot of brothers listening to this show, they doing well, man. CEOs, accountants, financial advisors, they 7, 8 streams of income, they killing it. Got me wondering why I'm still working, but that's a whole nother thing. But let's talk about like how that CEO, that family CEO mindset helps them. But I feel like in a way that can kind of deter them because people in the family are already look at them, well, they're making all the money. They don't need to be making all our decisions. We've been around for 50, 60 years. Yeah, they got money now, but we've been in it longer. How do you like, because I feel like it's always going to be, at some point, it's going to be some family conflict.
So here is the thing, and we all should be struck. We are looking forward to the day. I know I am. There is going to come a time where you can't tell us nothing. And you can't tell me what to do. I'm not acting in that behavior. You can't tell me. I'm here for wisdom. I'm here for you to ask my perspective, my insight, my experience. So we have to stop looking to convince the group that we won't be able to convince. We won't be able to do that. But they do have some level of wisdom that we can benefit from. The other thing that I think it's important to acknowledge, those that are making the money within their family and have that discrepancy between the elders and the next generation, they have a they're in a very unique position. We have a good combination of tradition and technology. Just enough. Like just enough blend of the two. So we kind of got to walk a fine line. We got to be able to communicate with the elders and we got to be able to communicate with the young kids. Like it's a fine line, but we're skilled to be able to do it. It's not about convincing them. It's about supporting where they fit in. They fit in with wisdom. They know things we don't know. They experience things we didn't experience, and we just have to respect that. And instead of trying to change it, like you need to see things how we see it. Finding where they fit. A great place to do that is starting by aiding in their retirement. If they don't already have it, again, I always speak from personal experience before I speak from client experience. I was fortunate to retire my mother in 2023. She didn't have a retirement plan. She raised four kids as a single parent. She didn't know anything about planning that far into the future because she had to think about how she was going to feed them today and tomorrow. So after I retired my mother, she fit better because she had been a caregiver for over 30 plus years. She fit better and just keeping the legacy alive through the children. She just fit better in there. Let me tell you about when your mom was like that and how I had to deal. But let me tell you about this and just keeping the legacy alive. Just reminding and storytelling, because without that, our legacy gets lost. So we need it anyway. So I would just encourage all the family CEOs out there that's going to step up after this. Don't get too wrapped in trying to convince, but more trying to find how they fit into the system that you're creating. Because the next generation may not fit how you want them to do either. It's about having the system that they can just find their way through, giving them a safe space to make mistakes, find their way, carve out their journey, giving them a safe space to do that. You have the resources, you have the guidance, you have the insight, it's all here. But everybody got to do their 40 days in the wilderness, and we really can't stop that.
That's what I'm talking about. All right, fellas, the stage is open. Say your name, city, and state, and we talking to Lavaysha Davis. She giving it to us. Let's go.
This is Kalali from Calvert County, Maryland. We always like to do our introductions and stuff like that. First of all, Lavasia, awesome. I mean, you on it right now. You really hitting it, and this actually is hitting home. And I think it's gonna hit home for a lot of people because it's just like dealing with family is tough. You know what I mean? And it's like I've seen it from different levels, different ethnicities, and I'm sure you probably had the same thing too. Like people that look like us, people that don't look like us, like, you know, get a bunch of money, right? Because they did, they, you know, they are entrepreneurs and stuff like that. And then it just does not transfer to the next generation, like because they don't have the same drive, or just like you said, they're not in the same position. They're not prepared to take that initiative and do something with it. I don't know. I mean, we've been hitting on this topic of I guess how do you build like a coalition in your family to be able to execute this? I know we gotta, you know, take an initiative, but how do you really build that coalition to saying like, okay, I'm gonna take the initiative, and then but I can bring some people on board that are inside the family to really help with this.
Okay, I don't I always think I'm going to get flack, you know, to answering this question, but I think we tend to underestimate or overlook the importance of indoctrination. Large corporations use it, marketing strategies use it. You know, they don't mind indoctrinating us for a specific narrative, but we have a challenge indoctrinating those that we live with every single day. That's one, and I'm gonna dive deeper into that. But the second thing is, we are a loving people as we should be. And when we think of our family, we think about the love, we think about the care, the tradition, the connection. But because we're not looking at our family like a business, we don't see the value. Kill like a the it's something called human capital value. And it's a real thing. What the value of that particular person is to a family enterprise for their lifespan. And we are living longer these days. So we're talking about 75, 80 years plus for women, you know, maybe a little less than for men, but the amount of value that we can receive, that's a long time. That's a long time. And we don't even see it that far. We're looking at raising the children, then we have to be there for them to support it in adulthood. We're not seeing like the longevity of it. So the coalition starts with, I gotta know from birth if I have the benefit, or if I'm hearing this later and my children are 7 and 8 or 10 and 12 or 15 or 16, those are still very early, the indoctrination. We got to make them believe we are capable. Like we are more than willing, more than capable. It's okay to believe we can have abundance. This is our birthright. This is okay. This is the norm. This is not some abstract reality or anything like this is the norm. So how I'm going to do, like, I need you to be a role in this. And starting that conversation earlier, as much as in indoctrinating them, you can be whatever you want from this list. This is the list that we need in our family. You can be whatever you want, baby, but from this list, make the list long, like, you know, to make them feel like they really choosing. But we need this. If we don't have these things, we're still going to be in the same position. So the coalition isn't just about the vision by itself. It's the action plan behind it and indoctrinating and driving the narrative that our family business is the first business we serve, period. And this is how you can serve it. And when you serve it, we're going to grow in value like this. And then your job is to make this value go up even more because it's one thing to move through life. How am I going to make money? Like that's one way to move through life, just trying to figure out what I'm going to do to make money. It's a totally different journey when you have received money and it's like, how do I live well? I don't have to fight and figure out how to make money. My family created that for me, but how do I live well? And if you don't prepare them for that and give them purpose, like the dynamics of being able to work together are always going to be hard. Like you just have, it's not going to go away. Do you guys watch Succession? Does
Yeah,
anybody watch this? It does not go away. In fact, it gets worse. It does not go away, but they're always confined by some system, some will, some trust, some provision. There's something that binds them. They want to do something crazy, but they know if I get convicted of a felony, I'm going to forfeit my shares. They know if I have drug addictions, I forfeit my access to this. They know if I divorce, I'm not going to be able to do this. Like there's some system that keeps them in check, but that don't mean they're not still going to wander. So again, a long way to just express how deep the thought has to go. And you really have to mean this from the bottom of your heart when you say multi-generational wealth versus I just want independent financial security.
have you written a book?
It's in progress.
Okay.
It's
And the reason I'm asking you that is because on the one, like, I'm feeling everything you're saying, but I'm also struggling with it. Because it's like what you're saying is correct. We don't look at our families as like human capital and like as resources. And I do believe that we should look at it like that. I got just two questions. For real, like in my family, we didn't even confront any of these kind of issues until there was like a trauma in our family, right? My father passed away 2.5 years ago. And then all of a sudden, it's like, what do we do with the rest of this estate? You know what I'm saying? And then it's like, oh, we have to make business decisions. We're not in a position to operate as a business. You know what I mean? So, like, for instance, this is just a simple question. So, like, what would you recommend in terms of like who should be the executor of an estate?
Okay, so the executor of an estate has to have emotional stability for
Okay.
one. You do not need to be driven by emotion when it's time to make your decisions because you're making them on the behalf of the beneficiaries or those who are supposed to receive benefit. You have to have emotion. If you got that person that's going up and down, they would not benefit as an executor. Another role, the other thing about an executor of an estate, they have to be very much aware of what your intentions were. If you never had a conversation with them about your intentions, they should not be the executor of your estate. They don't even know what to do. They're just winging it. So, and I love that you even brought in estate because that's what we mean by the family enterprise. Like most when I say that, they think there's a specific business that a family owns and operates, and then that's how they make money. But in each individual in a family has an estate, and that estate is going to have some value to it. It may not be high because they didn't get to do a lot, but if they do buy a home, if they do get a life insurance policy, if they do get a 401k, that's an estate. And you should have a system that everybody's estate flows to. And because guess what's all going to happen to every last one of us on this call? We all going to pass away. And like we can't stop that. So where does your estate go? And then if you don't have someone particularly in mind about the executor who can manage it, or a trustee, if you don't have those people, start creating those people, or else you're going to have to outsource it. And then we really lose control because now it's getting into different hands. It's okay to outsource certain services. But the person who makes the decisions based on the estate and the family business is a different thing.
So you recommend that should be like a member of the family in some
Absolutely.
capacity.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. It sure be somebody who knows the vision, who knows the legacy, who's driving it forward. But it's not my job to know tax laws. It's not my job to know how to invest and get the rate of return we need. That's not my job. My job is to outsource those things, but keep the family vision and legacy alive. And you have to create that person if it doesn't exist, because where are they going to come from?
You know, we got huge technological transitions and transformations coming up in our society right now. Do you have any ideas or recommendations how we envision what those future job roles are going to be? Because we know that there's going to be a lot of shifting in the job market, and there's going to be a lot of shifting in terms of needs for families, in terms of needs for societies and things like that. So do you have any recommendations on, like, as these shifts are hitting us, and obviously, you know what I'm talking about, technology, AI, different things like that, what the actual job roles might be? Or do you think they'll be the same?
I try when I have these type of conversations, I'll just answer this as transparently as possible, Kalali. I try to avoid speculation. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't have that about what it's going to be. We all have our ideas, our estimates. We call that scenario-based planning. Like if something happens like this, we need to be able to adjust like this. It the I it does not revert too much from what we've just been talking about already. Even if I don't know, we should be shaping someone in our family that's only designed to understand technology and the pace that it's moving and staying up to date with it. What's going to happen? How do we need to respond? What are we doing? That's the thing about the family business. You would bring that expertise into your business, right? Like if you wanted to figure out what the next move is need to be, we may get some consultations. We may or ongoing consultants. It's something like that. You may fill that role permanently. You just may get some insight. Think about it from the same perspective. One of your kids, if I'm sorry, I'm just assuming you have children. I don't mean to
Got
assume.
two.
Okay.
I got two.
Okay. Well, how old are they?
I got an 8-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son.
Trust and believe that 8-year-old knows more than you think she does already about AI and technology.
Oh, yeah.
It's about feeding that, feeding it, welcoming it. What do you know? How do you see it? How do we work this? How do we manage it? How do you use it? Like you and have like welcoming. There are communities, specifically the Jewish community, that welcomes analytical conversations with their children and gets their insight. They actually introduce their children based on the role they're supposed to fill in the family. Hey, this is Johnny, this is our engineer. Oh, this is our prosecuting attorney. This is our investment banker. This is our international business leader. They introduce them before their name. They introduce the role they're going to play because they're indoctrination in their mind. So you just got to let that, you're going to be the one to be able to tell me where we're going. So I want to have open conversations and dialogue about that. Tell me your thoughts. Now, they may not be too put together because they're eight,
Yeah.
but don't discount it either and just shape it over time.
Got you, got you. Now, LaVasia, you've definitely given me a lot to think about. And if I could just encourage you, write that book
Okay.
because just from what you're saying, I know that there's a diamond in there that like we need as a community to like at least get us started in thinking in these ways, because I can tell you there's a lot of people we need it, but there's a lot of people who aren't thinking in this way at all. And so definitely I appreciate everything you said, and if I could just encourage you, keep it moving.
I sure will come. Thank you for that encouragement for sure. I sure will.
Hey, good afternoon, Miss Davis. Marie Simmons, I'm calling out of Rockledge, Florida. How are you doing today?
I am well today, Ray. Thank you. You said Florida, right?
Yes, Rockledge, Florida, man.
Okay.
And I got so many questions. I'm just sitting back absorbing, like a sponge, everything you're talking about. But I'll limit it just a few. So my first question with the trust, so how can a trust help protect transferred wealth, right? Compared to, say, a will that has to go through probate. And not only that, so it's a two-part question, I guess. How can a trust help protect that transferred wealth from beneficiaries, creditors, or if they get a divorce, like how can is there a way to ensure that those assets or whatever's passed down and is somehow protected from that type of those type of mis unfortunate events that could pop up, I guess, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It makes perfect sense. The first part about that between the trust and the will, of course, a will has some asset distribution power, but the problem with it is it can be contested. Like it could still be subject to probate court. And now that's where conflict comes in, because there's no way to decipher with just the will unless, if someone can contest it, anybody can do that. There's no way to just use that instrument to make sure that there's no conflict. A trust, however, is designed to distribute assets post the creator's death. So the person who created it gets to leave specific instructions. So one thing in there is being very involved in your estate planning process and thinking, you know your family, you know who the firecracker is. Tame that firecracker in them instructions. Now you know who's going to give up the fight and who's going to cause a problem. You know that. We all know who that person is.
Absolutely.
But being involved in that estate planning process. Now, how it can help with the transfer of those assets, making them portable, depends on the different types of trust. There's two primary categories of trust. That's revocable and irrevocable or irrevocable. Those are two types, but there are subcategories of those trusts. In fact, there's over 70 different types of trust, and it depends on what your goals, instructions are, and the beneficiaries that you're trying to serve. to determine which one is the best fit. Now, sometimes things sound fancy, so people start to take advantage of structures, because that's what that is. That's a legal structure that they may not be prepared for. Their estate may not be prepared for. There are thresholds that you want to keep in mind. But when you have, once your estate is somewhere between, and this is a ballpark figure, don't take this with a grain of salt, guys, but I'm trying to keep it in a visual. If once you reach anywhere from, if I think about states like 75,000 to like 1 million, but if your estate is valued somewhere in between there, and to calculate your estate, calculate everything, calculate your home, the value of your home, the value of your retirement accounts or any other type of investment accounts, the value of your life insurance policies, the actual death benefit, not just the cash value for those who know the difference between those life insurance policies. That is your estate value. And if it's bigger than that, if it's within that range, a living trust is everyone can benefit from having a living trust. That's going to give you the instruction, that's going to fight off probate. Is going to let your family know, and you get to put a successor trustee in place, that legacy continuation, so people know what to do. That's going to help a whole lot. But if once you get over those estate values and you need more specific planning, more specific instructions, it's just who can do what? How do you want them to do it? How do you want to stay in control? What things are unacceptable to you? You got to know your values and principles in and out. Like what's unacceptable, preventing them from decisions that they make, interfering with the wealth you're trying to transfer, who you marry should not matter on whether my grandchildren get their assets or not. It's just having deep conversations, essentially. But the type of trust depends on what you're trying to achieve.
Of course, it depends on the type of trust it is, but is there a way to set up, I guess, incentives, right? For example, I've heard, if your children complete college, right, it could unlock this portion of money or unlock, these assets. Is that something, is there a specific type of trust for that as well?
No, those are
Something
just
you're dealing with?
provisions. Those are considered provisions. Those are the instructions.
I
Incentivized
see.
is just like age restrictions. You can't get anything until you're 25, 30, 35, or until you're married, or you can only borrow money. That's the difference as well, to keep the what we call the family bank funded, is it always comes in a form of a very low interest loan that you have to repay. But now your trust may need an investment committee or a loan committee to review those. Hey, you want to borrow money? Let me look at that business plan. Let me see what the education gonna do. Let me see what that real estate investment's gonna do. Is it really gonna bring the value back and increase it in value? Okay, you qualify for a loan, you have to pay it back. So there's always different incentives and instructions. It's really just about the information that you know on how to build those incentives and instructions. So any advisor that serves you should be able to give you a comprehensive approach, not fragmented. Oh, I can only give you advice on the investments, or I can only give you advice like this. Like your advisor should be able to talk you through anything that impacts your financial world and your family enterprise.
Understood. Well, I'm talking to my advisor right now. You just don't
Oh, I
know it
love
yet.
that.
Is
I love that rate.
that
Yes. Come on. That's how I like to see that. I love
that's how that's gonna work,
Anytime I
so
get two snaps, guys, just know those two snaps mean
okay.
something.
Can a trust help maintain, say, privacy regarding the transferal of wealth? You can go online and try to find anybody's net worth for whatever reasons, and sometimes that invites problems where people, start coming out of the woodwork when they find out, all of a sudden you have this wealth like generated. So is there a way to do it privately, the transfer, or is it all like public record?
There are ways. That's where those types of trust comes in, especially those two categories of revocable or irrevocable. And then we always call it like forensic level versus surface level. There are surface level ways to protect your privacy. And then there's more forensic level ways to protect your privacy, which goes deeper into the planning, a little longer into the planning. But there is always a way to prioritize privacy, because that's what happens on the wealth journey anyway. As you're in pursuit to increase your income, you typically talk a lot more because you're trying to make a connection, establishment. You're trying to find that one room, that one conversation, that one thing that's going to change the trajectory of your business or your service or whatever you do. So you're a little bit more open in your conversation. But as your net worth or your estate value increases, privacy becomes more important. So
Understood.
it's a natural or it's a natural elevation to get into privacy planning, but there's a way to do it from jump too.
Gary out of Duval, y'all got anything? Let's go.
Duval, I'm sorry.
I don't have any. This is Gary Johnson out of Jacksonville. I don't have any questions. I just wanted to just thank you for coming on and basically dropping a lot of these nuggets. I would like to be in touch with you because I'm actually in the process of trying to set up some trusts and estates and things for my daughter that's coming up. So did you have any contact information that I could reach out to you on that?
Absolutely. I didn't know what how we wanted to share. First of all, social media is a great way. Everything is under my name. But what I want to encourage for our listeners, again, my everything is under LaVasia Davis. But we also have a community of those family CEO mindsets that are taking the step into becoming their family enterprise. So we have a community for that, and we have a workshop dedicated to helping train those family CEOs. This is their, typically the first generation to step into that role. So to help give you the resources and the education and the ongoing support that comes with that navigating that new world.
Okay, yeah, the workshop sounds wonderful. When do you know when that would be?
And
Or
yes, our next one is July 17th, 18th, and 19th. It's a 3-day virtual event. It's typically about 3 hours per day, and it gets into that family CEO mindset and how to run your family like a business.
okay.
Structures, tax structures, and the financial instruments that you can use to support that.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds good. I'll definitely be in touch with that then.
What you know about Duval?
Listen, okay, so Jacksonville is a place that I frequent often. So Duval always comes. So when y'all said it, I was like, oh, I know that. I know that.
LaVasia Davis, you enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays?
I told you guys I felt right at home. So I did. I am enjoying myself, so we can keep the conversation going.
Oh yeah, now I was just like I said, I was just kind of, getting you warmed up for what we about to do, but you done did that. And before I let you get out of here, and I'm glad you enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays. We definitely probably gonna have to have you back on here. But my high income earners was like, listen, man, y'all be forgetting about us. Like y'all every talking about the brothers getting started, but we already in the game. And I was looking at your LinkedIn and I saw you have high net worth tax optimization expertise. So before we let you get out of here, because I know you probably got that good Sunday dinner waiting for you, because I know you said you got, people in Dallas. I got homies from Oak Cliff, so I already know about Dallas too. But when we talk about that high net worth tax optimization, because I feel like the more money, they say the more you make, the more they take and all that. So let's give us some couple tips for the Henrys out there.
Man, first off, shout out to your listeners for recognizing that. I agree that we spend a lot of our time, energy, effort, and resources and pouring into those that, just the average individual, which is nothing wrong with that because we need to help pull more of our community and those that kind of struggle in certain areas. We need to pull them up as well. But that is exactly what we talk about at LS Advisors is servicing those who have already done like the non-average results, those Henrys, those who are making a lot of money, especially for the first time in their family. Because I think it's about less than 4% of at least members of our community make over $200,000. So that's like 40,000 to 50,000 of us that have done the non-average. And those are the people who have already done half the work. Those are the people we should be collaborating with to move our to make our economic mobility move faster. So one thing that I have, it depends on how they're making their money. W-2 income versus, how they're make, if they are business owners, it's two different things. We got to introduce two different strategies. The reason why tax optimization is so important, whether it's W-2 or 1099, or you're making business revenue, if we are not careful, 40% of every dollar we earn can end up going to taxation in so many different forms. And when you operate individually, your tax, especially W-2 earners, your tax strategies become smaller and smaller, like what you can take advantage of. But if we build that family enterprise, and remember, guys, it's just about growing in value. That's the meaning of the family business. So we just have a legal structure, an LLC, a partnership, general partnership, something like that, that we are just growing in value in. If it's an actual business, fine. But if it's just about investing into real estate, et cetera, that's even better. Now, if we combine our resources, we can combine our tax strategies. Now, if I make a lot of money, but my children don't, or my spouse doesn't, or my direct associate that I'm working closely with, I've already got him to buy into the vision or her to buy into the vision. We can distribute income to reduce tax liability. We can maximize what financial instruments that we can invest in the more people we got. Like, oh, the more people we got, the more we can multiply it by the number of people. Because it's one thing when you look at your tax bill as an individual, but I encourage everyone to calculate it as a family. If it's you and your spouse, and remember, we're talking about long term, you, your spouse, and your children. If I make $100,000 a year, and let's just say that that results in $18,000 in taxes per year with no planning, 18,000. And if somebody can do the math real fast for me, because I don't have it on here, somebody pull it up. If I make $100,000 a year starting at age 35, and I'm going to do that all the way to 55, that's 20 years. What's 18,000 times 20?
That 360,000, if my
So
math is correct.
360,000, that's one. If we multiply that by two, that's your spouse. If you multiply that by two more, because I think Kalali said he got two children, that's 1.4 million in a 20-year time period that is going to go to the government. And that's on the minimum side. That's a small portion of it. We're talking about a child that's going to live 60 plus years. In 20 years of their life, 20 years of our life, we're going to give 1.5 million to the government. That's 1.5 million that we could have reinvested in our family enterprise. So one thing I encourage Henry's to do, of course, and I hate to just call y'all that, but that's what they call y'all in the back. That's what they say. That's what they say. But for my high income earners who have done more than average, if you don't bring your planning into a centralized place like the family office, that you can't point out those gaps. You don't even know that those gaps exist. And it's showing you how to feel as how to get that 1.5 million back that can now be invested in your family enterprise, that can go and buy real estate, buy businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And now your family can become self-sustainable just off the money you would have given away to the government. That's not even counting the money you actually can save or the money you actually can invest throughout your lifetime. That's just the taxes. So tax optimization is uno. Like numero uno, number one, the first thing we're going to address. And then we get into other savings and accumulation modes that people aren't aware that they could be utilizing just amongst their household, just amongst their household.
Yeah, because I was going to say, a lot of Henry's, we already, like I said, we 151 episodes. So, we know about the accumulation phase. But I feel like a lot of people, when they get to that preservation phase with the volatility in the stock market, the volatility and the uncertainty in real estate and other areas that they've invested in, 401ks getting lost in the sauce too. So let's
I
talk
want
about that a
to
little
add
bit.
one thing in there about that. This is what happens, and this is what we mean, guys. And I hope I'm not giving too much on here because listen, when you're building a portfolio, it's important to understand the different types of risk, right? When we talk about the accumulation phase, this is directly speaking to the accumulation phase within a portfolio. We, of course, understand that there's going to be market risk, like the volatility, and we get to decide how much money allocation, like how much money we want there. If real estate is an asset class that we like, we get to decide how much money we want there and we want to manage that risk. If we're business owners, we may want to manage our business risk, our market risk, our real estate risk. But the least risk, the biggest threat, let me see if I can get y'all to say this. When we said what's the role that's needed to get that business off the ground, and Kalali talked about the chief executive. What's the biggest threat to that business? Just a guess. Like just a guess. What's the biggest threat to that business you're getting off the ground? Take a guess. It's not, I just want to hear what y'all thoughts are. Because this is what we mean by the CEO mindset. We got to start thinking about these things. So what's the biggest threat?
I don't know.
Taxes,
Taxes is
death.
definitely, that's number two.
Death.
Who said that?
I was
Who
gonna say
said that?
I was gonna say lack of succession planning. Ray said death.
Ray said, "Death, you are at. There is no account or hedging for mortality risk. That's the biggest threat. So you know what we drag our feet on getting life insurance. We will drag our feet. So our portfolio will have everything else in it, but the adequate amount of life insurance. And life insurance can make sure it can cover us for mortality risk, and it can cover our accumulation phase. It can help us build capital that we can launch tax-free." that we can launch and control the interest, that we can launch and become our family bank. That's usually the last thing in people's portfolio. So when we're talking about asset allocation, because that's what, like, all the different risks that you're taking, they all have to be hedged. They all have to be mitigated, but we just don't mitigate the biggest risk to our family in general. Kalali, you and I share an experience. It wasn't until death hit that was like, oh, but isn't that the one that's inevitable? Like, that's the one we know is coming, but that's the risk we are not mitigating. My family didn't have to sit there distraught if it was a part of the family business structure that everybody get life insurance, because in, again, our peers in other communities, that is a requirement.
But that's what I'm saying. The old folks don't want to mitigate it.
Because they okay, so they understand life insurance a different way. They understand life insurance as a way to cover, so they're not a burden. I just need to make sure you can bury me. They didn't know that life insurance is actually an accumulation tool. It's actually a private financial tool that you can, it's the only one you can use to accumulate, access, and transfer money tax-free. It's the only, they don't know that. They know they come from a different era where there was a systematic construct that prevented them from taking advantage of the other benefits of life insurance. That's what's like, we can't convince. We have to do, we have to show. If you start a life insurance policy, you build capital inside of it and you leverage it and go buy an investment property, they're gonna be like, oh, show me how to do that. Like, sometimes we just have to do.
Now, I was gonna say, are you referring to like whole life policies when you're saying this right now, or like borrowing against it?
I'm referring to permanent life insurance. There are different types of permanent life insurance, whole life, universal life, and which one fits the scenario depends on what we're trying to do. But permanent life insurance is our mortality risk mitigator, because that's what we know gonna happen. So God forbid I'm on this journey and I'm pushing. I ain't quite figured it out yet, but I'm on the way. And boom, abruptly it stops. Should the whole family enterprise just fall apart because I wasn't able to prevent the fight. I wasn't able to create the financial resources yet. I was still working on it. But something happened. Okay, but that's okay. I've been watering this money tree. Now my family about to get a little bit more than what probably what I could have did in my lifetime, just a little bit. But it's just when we talk about portfolios, before we get to the fancy stuff, we have to prevent the one thing we know is going to happen. I want to share a brief story about my brother who I mentioned, who I lost. He was the only boy. We were three, it was family of four, four kids, three girls, one boy. And he was a middleweight Golden Glove boxing champion. So his rules in the house was everybody had to know how to fight. It was terrible. I mean, I didn't enjoy it at the time. I didn't know that he was teaching me such a valuable principle at the time. But I'm like, sir, I don't want to fight. Like, you, well, we had to know how to fight. And in order for him to test us, we would just be making a snack and he'd just give you a body shot. Like, sir, I wasn't even paying attention. That's unfair. And he would say, like, that's when things hit you, when you're not paying attention. So the thing about a good fighter, they never get caught with their hands down. And he was like, you got to keep your hands up, keep them up. I'm like, well, I'm making a snack, but keep your hands up. So it's the same thing when you come to planning. You never want to get caught with your hands down.
Protect yourself at all times.
Protect yourself at all times. All times. So portfolio allocation is not always just about the offense, like how to put it in the market, how to do that. Sometimes it's about the defense. 90% of the time it's about the defense, because things are going to happen that we can't control. So how do we defend ourselves against it?
It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away.